Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome in to the latest edition of the BBP. Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, your Bengals beat writers here at Cincinnati.com and Cincinnati Inquirer. What is going on?
Not much, man. We hit a little, level patch after a few weeks of you and I traveling around the country and, you know, coming back to Cincinnati, splitting up again before Combine. I mean, it's little bit of off season, little bit, so it's good.
You get like a taste,
yeah, a little bit,
you get a little appetizer of off season, and it's wham, combine, free agency, draft, and then you stand up and you're dazed,
yeah,
trying to figure out what happened. But so this is kind of, well, so there's not, in all honesty, we don't really, there's not a ton of newsy stuff to really go through right now, so we'll just sort of weave our way through some stuff and it's out there and see where we wind up. I've got a list of about five things I'd like to touch on here. I've got mock draft, I've got Kevin Zeitler, I got people not happy about season tickets going up. We got Trevor Roach here.
Yeah.
I've got a weekly Pac-Man update. Gonna find out why Jim's mad. I'm gonna try to get to all that stuff. But I don't know. We'll see where it all ends. We're flying by the seat of our pants today, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's like a free form. You know what? It'd be like getting in the booth at Rap City, and you just got a freestyle. And
this is about to be the BBP mixtape. we're just gonna let it. Maybe there will be a battle rap in the middle of it. You don't know. You don't know. Crazier things have happened. All right, let's jump into some Bengals talk. First of all, I'd like to thank all of you people that beat the soul out of me and turned me into a less of a man who's not proud of himself or anything about his life right now. Did my first mock draft already. This is unprecedented. I am obviously unhappy about it. But you know what? You people... You resisted. Resist. 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 You did. And you pushed for change, and so change you got. Pointless mock draft that I hope you opened it up and loved it and just thought it was the greatest thing, because it changes. It's going to change in like 2 weeks when everybody goes to the combine and numbers move around and people have medicals and all this other stuff starts happening, risers and fallers, and free agency happens, and all of a sudden the same team needs don't exist because Tony Romo's now in Chicago, and Jimmy Garoppolo's in Cleveland, and everything changes. So, cool. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope everyone feels invigorated by the process. You beat me down in the submission, let me go, and I went against my better judgment, but I did it for you, the people, because you're relentless.
And it just goes to show, Paul, because I don't know why you did this mock draft. I mean, I told you that, like, it was too early. I was like, oh, Paul, don't do it. Don't do it. It's too early. And then, like, it comes out on the day we record this podcast that your pick for the Bengals has to have shoulder surgery. I'm like, oh, that's why you don't do mock drafts this early, Paul. I mean, I'm telling you.
You're the worst at this point. You have completely.
You completely made a heel turn on the BBP. Like, you used to be, when this first started, you were like, you know, a likable new guy. You know, everybody's really enjoying Jim. Hey, he's really, really funny, good rapport. And now you've heel turned. You're like NWO at this point. Like, you're like Hogan with the black beard.
I was just about to say, I do have the off-season 9 o'clock shadow going on. So yeah, maybe there's a little bit of
Oh my god.
Oh my god. I felt so bad for you. I saw that news. I was like, oh dang it. I was like, this is exactly
Good Zach. Talk about like happy new guy, you know? He's getting ready to go to spring training, start his second season, sees me show up and start complaining about all the peer pressure about mock drafts. He makes a tweet to get people going even more, talking about how I got file folders. File folders. And it got people all jacked up again. And then, you know what the response was when he tweeted that out about how I showed up with a bunch of file folders for a mock draft? Someone tweeted to him something to the effect of, yeah, that's nice, but he also will be the last one to do one. Yawn, exclamation point. Oh, man. Hurt my feelings. Hurt me to the core.
Yeah.
All right.
This is what happens in February for NFL writers. Like, there's, like you said, there's a little bit of news, but it's not enough.
We're not quite there yet.
Yeah, so it's, you know, we have some fun.
The post Super Bowl malaise.
Yeah.
All right. So I did do the mock draft. No thanks to all of you people. I had number 9 to the Bengals. I had Reuben Foster, linebacker out of Alabama. Most of you people who are into the draft stuff know who he is. You know, won all kinds of awards. You know, that really was the one. Jonathan Allen at defensive line and Foster really were the two best players on that defense, which is one of the best defenses we've seen in a long time. I mean, you're talking about a real vicious combo there.
Yeah.
Tracking and getting faster, getting younger. You know, he can really run sideline to sideline. He's an incredible tackler, really good, vicious, violent hitter. So he's got that sort of Maluga side to him where he's a really, really tough run defender where he can come up, but he really sprints sideline to sideline. He can cover pretty well too. He's kind of a do-it-all guy, which at 9, you really have to be if you're going to be a linebacker in the top 10 has to be a do-it-all. You know, I've seen comparisons, Bobby Wagner in Seattle, you know, type of guy like that. I mean, just does it all. And that's the kind of guy they need. I mean, they need a younger, you know, faster guy who can do it all at that spot to play next to Burfict in the nickel. Can Nick Vigil do that? Can we confidently sit here and say that you believe that Nick Vigil can do that? I don't know. So that's why I thought Foster was a nice fit. But something that you brought up was there's a medical thing here.
Yeah.
Not only just brand new reports about shoulder surgery, but he's had concussions too.
Yeah, Paul, it's interesting, especially when you look at the recent history of this team. So look, Oboye, he was injured coming into the league, and that's an odd situation. I think ACLs are almost sort of forgiven at this point, but Darquez Dennard hasn't been healthy, even though he kind of was out of Michigan State. He did have a labrum surgery. It was on the other shoulder than the one he hurt a year ago. Obviously, we know what's happened to Tyler Eifert since he's come into the league. I don't know this for sure, but I would have to think a diagnosed concussion injury in a defense that really needs that linebacker to be amazing. And as Marvin Lewis always likes to say, tip of the spear, that's got to be concerning. It's William Jackson III tears a pack on the first day. Now, he probably had no medical issue that said, hey, this guy's going to tear some muscles in his chest randomly. But, like, it's been a bad stretch of first-round picks getting hurt.
Well, you're right. I mean,
obviously you've got this bad run of luck with injured guys there and guys not really playing, but and that's what you're usually able to take out of the equation when you're drafting in the top 10. I mean, that's sort of the way they've tried to find top 10, top 15 value in the back half of the first round is having the luxury of a loaded roster and a willingness to let guys be in the background in order to get value. And sometimes that's been with guys that have been hurt or whatever. So you get concussions and stingers are just a different, it's a different flag, yeah. You know, now anymore, where guys, you start getting multiple concussions and their careers end before they really even get started. And that's certainly something that they're going to have to think about with him. And again, that's part of the combine. A big part of the combine is
right
getting the medicals on these guys and figuring out how serious these problems are and how that will affect their, you know, their future.
And here's to bring it to a kind of a local level in a way. Luke Kuechly, right?
Right.
Luke, I didn't know this, Paul. I obviously knew he was from Cincinnati and all that. I guess I was not aware of his concussion history prior to that really sort of devastating scene you saw that ended his season 6 games early this past year. Where here's a guy who had concussions before he got to Carolina. And now, look, I mean, he's played, you know, turned in 4 Pro Bowl seasons, 3 All Pros, you know, 71 games. He didn't miss any games until the last 2 years. Honestly, do we know his future at this point? Will he be allowed to play? We don't know. I mean, that it's a scary thing, and it's a risk teams will have to weigh. Where it's like, well, maybe he had 1 or 2. And he's more susceptible to 3, 4, 5, but, you know, maybe with proper technique, he can play 4 or 5 years. Like, that's a weird trick. Like, that's almost, I don't know. I mean, we're not in any personnel rooms, but that to me is like an interesting conversation teams, I think, are going to have. I mean, Javid Best in Detroit is maybe an extreme example. And then you got, you know, his career totally ended early. And then you got like Sam Shields released by the Packers. He suffered his, I think, 5th concussion in week 2. Mm-hmm. And that kept him out all year. He admits he still has headaches, but he wants to play still. I mean, I can't see any team signing him. So it's, you're right, Paul. I don't know. When you're coming out of college into the NFL, I don't think you're going to suddenly avoid more concussions. I think it turns into a, well, what's an acceptable risk? And concussions to me, Paul, are almost, I don't want to deny any kid his dream or whatever. And you know, it's a business and whatnot. I don't know. That's a really, shoulder surgeries and all these other things to me are almost like, you know, you can work through that to an extent. The brain trauma is, man, that's a scary thing. If guys have diagnosed concussions.
Yeah.
Coming
I think you're right, and it's going to be an interesting conversation I plan on having with some coaches and GMs at the combine is how do concussions on a guy's resume sit? How do they affect the way you view players now? Do they at all? Should they?
And hopefully they're honest with you because they're not players that are under contract, that are with other teams, that are free agents, that are their own guys. Like I really hope that, you know, they're honest about that because, I mean, they have no reason not to be. I mean, they don't have to pick any of these guys. Yeah. So I'm really curious about that too. I mean, it's a new age with this stuff. And shoulder surgery would be one thing. That'd also be concerning, by the way. Like, he'll be ready for mini camp. And that's like what Bengals like. Fans just love to hear minor surgery. Right. No big deal.
always starts as a no big deal surgery, especially this time of year. So yeah, it's something to keep an eye on with him. But as far as game tape goes, I mean, he's ridiculous. He's an incredible linebacker. Now, he wouldn't be a guy. Most people don't think he's a guy that could come in and play the mic. So it makes a, you know, we hear so much from Paul Gunther. Every linebacker plays every position, and I think even more, it's more about in the nickel out there, being out there playing in the nickel, which I don't think Foster would have any problem doing. That's where they're in 75% of the time anyway. You know, if you want to move in the base, the offseason will be the time to move Burfict to the middle and have Vigil and or Vinny Ray and Foster playing on the outsides in your base. I mean, that's your minority of the time that you're in that defense anyway. So that's something that you could potentially do. You could work around any issues I think that you would have with his specific place. He's fast. He tackles great. He can cover. He's a vicious hitter. He's got great instincts. He played big time football at Alabama. It checks every box in, as far as that goes. A few other guys I was kicking around have brought out some interesting conversations. You know, Solomon Thomas from Stanford, we're seeing him more and more coming off the board before nine even gets here. He's a beast of a pass rusher. Some people think he can move in and be almost playing like a three technique, which is what Geno Atkins plays. He moved inside and out at Stanford. He's shown that he can get in there from just about anywhere. He's got great bursts. He's a big, thick guy. He's not your prototypical end that the Bengals have, he's not 6'6". I think he comes out of like 6'3" or something like that. But he's big. He's 270-some. He's not little. But he really had something in the Sun Bowl against North Carolina. He just dominated. You get into that, and you get into the receiver discussion with Mike Williams from Clemson, Corey Davis from Western Michigan. You know, there's a few guys that are out there. What's your take on a receiver at nine? I mean, there's a lot of people have some pretty strong opinions on certain positions just shouldn't be taken in the top 10 unless you know it's A.J. Green, which obviously this team doesn't have a problem taking a receiver in the top 10 when they did have a shot at A.J. Green known as one of the greatest drafts that we've seen in a long time. So they're not afraid to go receiver, and they obviously could have, you know, if you could put another top receiver next to A.J. Green with Tyler Boyd already there, all of a sudden you get pretty scary on offense.
Yeah, And I can't remember, Paul, when we first talked about this. I do agree in general about the pass rushing aspect. I think Foster is intriguing from a talent perspective. But I'll be honest, I'm okay with that receiver at nine if he's there. Like if that's what's there. You know what I mean? I'd hate to see like, we feel there's the value at 41 for, you know, a 6'5", 260-pound pass rusher. And maybe that's good enough. But all through this whole process, Paul, what have we said? Number nine has to be a starter. Has to be a guy who plays day one.
Yeah.
And makes an impact in some way. So to me, if it's a receiver, it's got to be the speed guy who can separate without question. And the reason I say those things is because those were the questions with Tyler Boyd, right? In the slot. Was he going to be able to separate down there? Was he going to be able to make those catches? Was he going to be able to get on the same page in a lot of the nuance with Andy Dalton? And I think he improved and was getting to that point late in the year. However, with this team and with number nine, that's the difference between this guy, maybe, and Tyler Boyd is, no, AJ's there, Tyler Boyd's your second-year receiver in the slot, and number nine draft picks on the other side, and oh, when that safety rolls over, he's got to win. He has to. So if they believe that guy's there, I'm okay with that, I guess, because it's just, I think they can kind of make it work. Paul Gunther's proven to me, Paul, I guess, is where I'm getting with this. He can get his defense to where it needs to be. Ken Zampezi may yet prove that to us, but I don't really know if he did that this first year. So why not, if that guy's number nine and you're like, wow, this dude is winning out there most of the time, and similar type players are available at 41 or 63, whatever it's going to be.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. But that's just the other thing. And that's why, you know, these guys will tell you it's going to be a best player available type situation. The question is, how much do certain positions get graded down by them? And my insight on that is it can only be history and what we've sort of heard. And I think that they value receiver. And you can say that when you see AJ Green, but also the fact that they've been able to find really quality receivers outside of the first round, where you're talking about a third, a second in Tyler Boyd, a third in Mohamed Sanu, a fifth in Marvin Jones, it tells you that unless they're looking for number one, I don't know that's where they go. Although, this is now a new offense. Ken Zampezi's offense is so based in the passing game. It is so much of those quick hit type things where maybe you want a guy who's unbelievable, has unbelievable speed and yak on the outside, where he'll be a bubble screen monster or whatever, and can hit over the top. Maybe that's what you want. You know, maybe like a, you know, like a John Ross out of Washington, a guy who could maybe be there early in the second round, and you could make that move that we've talked about a couple times, where you package your an extra 4 and 6 and try to move up from 41 to your low 30s and get a guy like that. Maybe that's something that's on your mind. Maybe you see another guy that you think would be around there too. And when you, and then you could, and you see, okay, well, that devalues Corey Davis a little bit or Mike Williams a right. little bit. And Williams isn't going to be your speed burner anyway. Corey Davis more so. I'm really curious to see what he runs when we get to the combine. So we'll get to the combine week. He's, you got the Western Michigan element, which I don't think anybody's hating on small school, and he seems to have all the physical tools to get it done. He's great after the catch, really good after the catch. That's the type of player that I think that Ken Zampezi really would go crazy over, a guy who's fast, who could take the top off, but also be really good yak-wise. And, I mean, that's one thing that I think that the offense was missing a little bit last year, was somebody who could do the type of stuff that Corey Davis has done. Now, can Corey Davis do it against real opponents and not against Toledo? You know I'm not going to hate on the Mac. I'm an Ohio U guy, okay? But there's a little difference when the dudes from Toledo are trying to track you down on the open field and, like, Reuben Foster is. So, I don't know. There's a lot of discussions to be had there about, do they value receiver? Do they value linebacker as worthy of top 10 picks? And if not, then maybe you just say they're going to take the best pass rusher that's available in a draft that's full of them, Solomon Thomas. Maybe they reach for Taco Charlton out of Michigan, who does fit their mold of the tall, long, lanky, athletic, just rocked up dude that has all the physical traits, and they can teach a little bit, very Dunlap-y in that way.
Right.
There's just a lot of questions I think that we're going to try to dig deeper into, and we'll find out more when we get to the combine and stuff. But the combine is first, and free agency, but all that stuff sort of blends together.
Oh, yeah.
I caught some reaction to talking about Kevin Zeitler. We touched on this a little bit last week. There's just more reaction to it out there than I thought there would be to Kevin Zeitler, me saying that Kevin Zeitler is less likely to be back. I said I'd pull it down to 30% at this point. People are really appalled at that, and I get that, and I would make that argument. And I was listening, you know, obviously you and I both go on Mo Egger's show a lot, and he was on a rant about changing his mind about wanting Kevin Zeitler over Andrew Whitworth, saying I'll always take the younger guy. And we've kind of had that conversation here as well. If it's an either-or situation, and it seems more and more that you look at it, it is an either-or situation. I think the value off the field is going to weigh more with Whitworth, but it looks like the team has decided to go that way, I think is where everything where it's coming from.
So teams can re-sign guys and in this period. Look, the Bengals just don't do stuff like other teams. So really, they're going to have discussions or not, and then stuff will happen in early March. From everything I've heard, Paul, this has this meaning the Bengals and Kevin Zeitler hasn't really been anything since last summer. I think once the guard market continued to explode, there was sort of a wait and see approach with David DeCastro in Pittsburgh. I think the wrench that was thrown in was Kyle Long suddenly being given $10 million a year in Chicago in between Osemele's UFA deal in Oakland. Then Kyle Long just dropped in there, and then DeCastro happened. Oh, and then the Bears paid an older Josh Sitton, what, $6, $7 million on top of that? That's given some background here, that things really ground to a halt with the Bengals and Kevin Zeitler then. And then nothing really happens in season. Everyone kind of knows that. And now, kind of like what you heard out in the Super Bowl, and here we are in mid-February, and it's really quiet. There aren't discussions. There aren't talks yet. And while we mentioned this, we're going to put some stuff up at Cincinnati.com in the coming weeks here about some free agency stuff. And Combine is when things heat up. So I'd be curious to see what happens in Indy. But it doesn't. As of now, I don't. I'm with you. I just don't think it's. You always got to allow a possibility, but it doesn't really look that great. If you're a Bengals fan, wishing that the right guard is back for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, it sort of feels similar to the way we felt at this point in time last year with George Iloka, where he wasn't first.
Yeah.
In the priority order. And he would be the guy that would take the fall when the number one came off, which was, at the time, Marvin Jones. I think there was a thought that they were willing to pay Marvin Jones whatever they had to pay Marvin Jones to keep him. And he had decided to leave anyway. And they turned that money over then to George Iloka. I mean, I think that's what it would have to take is Andrew Whitworth deciding to leave and then for some reason not coming to a deal for that money to then turn over to Kevin Zeitler. And I think Drake Kirkpatrick is number two in their pecking order. It's nice. Because of their lack of signing of value, the guard position. And where do they go with guard? Here's the thing. And this is really the issue that I have with it. It becomes too many holes to fill type of situation, but what are you going to be? Is it going to be Christian Westerman? Is it going to be TJ Johnson? You know, who played decent, I guess, filling in there at the end of the year. Is it going to be Andre Smith coming back and moving Jake Fisher down to guard? You just finally got Jake Fisher doing something he's excited about doing and really taking ownership of.
Right.
Seemed to, you know, according to Paul Alexander, felt like he played well, certainly in the Pittsburgh game. Are you suddenly going to go away from that because you're going to move him again? To try to fill this guard position? Do they draft a guy and plug him in day one? I mean, that's what they did with Kevin Zeitler when they drafted him in the first round, but they also had an extra first round pick that year.
Right.
They had a little bit of a luxury. I mean, do they take a guard at 41? And that leaves open the positions that we've been rolling through, receiver, defensive end, whatever, to fill that spot and plug that in day one to try to fill a gap.
Yeah, it's it's a great question. Christian Westerman is so fascinating because at draft day, he's a guard out of Arizona State who Marvin Lewis and Paul Alexander was like, oh, he can play center. And then it totally turned into as the now famous,
the witch hunt.
The witch hunt of Russell Bodine statements from Paul A. Christian Westerman fits the Paul A. interior mold, right? Strong guy, developmental. I mean, he's a fifth-round pick for a reason. But you're right. It was like, wow, this dude couldn't even get active or even hop over TJ Johnson for those last two games. I mean, we know how Marvin and those guys feel about veterans. In-house, I'll throw out one other name that if Kevin Zeitler walks – we will hear the coaches talk about ad nauseum, and that's undrafted free agent Alex Redmond out of UCLA. Came to the club listed as a center. He just turned 22. So a year ago this time, he was the youngest player who was draft eligible coming out of UCLA. We didn't see him early because he couldn't participate. UCLA's school year drifted into the mini camps. I don't know if people know this. So he ended the year listed at guard, 6'5", 304. They really like him as a prospect. So I'm just going to say his name and kind of tease that a little bit so we can just look really smart in like a month.
Right.
When they don't draft anybody and Zeitler walks and all of a sudden this dude is like getting first team reps. So just there's that. It's a good question, Paul. I don't know. Fisher's interesting to me because you're right. He really took ownership of that position, and I think he's got a different personality than Cedric Oboihe anyway. I don't know if he kind of watched and learned and saw Ced's sort of public passivity in a way where it was like, Jake went the other way. Like, I bring an energy and a fierceness to this position. I can do these things. So you drafted him in the second round to be a tackle. So there's a part of me, Paul, that's wondering like, man, do they like undercut this kid for the third year in a row?
Right.
And be like, no, you're going to play all these other positions. Like he did.
I think they need to say to Jake Fisher, you know, you got to go earn it.
Right.
But we're going to give you every opportunity to go out there and be the starting right tackle, or you really do stunt his development. And again, you end up in another situation where you don't know what a guy can do. At a certain point in time, you have to trust your scouts and who you drafted to go out there and develop and play and be good. There's just, you know, it's just an issue here where there's such a scared mentality of letting guys go out there and play. And hey, sometimes it backfires, as it did this past year with Cedric Oboihe, and you take one on the chin big time. And then the excuses come up, well, he's a left tackle. He should be a left tackle. Okay, well, I guess we'll at some point we'll find that out maybe. But, you know, you have to be willing to take that risk and assume that your people drafted the right guys that more often than not you're going to hit, and that's going to pay off for you.
Right.
There has to be a trust level there. And sometimes I feel like there's a big disconnect here between the trust between the coaches and the Duke Tobin and his staff and who they – but that's just it. When the coaches – it's supposed to not be as big of a deal when the coaches and the staff are as connected as they are with the Bengals, but it's still it.
Yeah, they are.
Even with that, with one of, where the coaches are as active as any team in the league in scouting, there still can be a disconnect when it comes to actually trying to play guys and figure that out on Sundays.
Yeah, and this is all part of the Darquez Dennard, you know, questions as well. And look, I mean, I mean, you do a great job of breaking down the snap counts per teams, like the rookies, and I know Atlanta's defense is a great example of letting young kids play, even New England to an extent. Kind of just plug and play and guys in a role and knowing the role and all that stuff. But, you know, in year three, first of all, you're coming up on the second contract quickly for guys who aren't in the first round. Or you got to make a really expensive decision like Darquez Dennard and $8 million, you know, if you're a first rounder. Well, you know, the league average of a career is still a shade under 4 years. I mean, these guys, at year three, they're not kids anymore. And I mean, this isn't baseball. This isn't the NBA where, you know, 3 years in is, oh, that's the young guy. Like, you know, I mean, let's be real. Like, Deron Smith's a vet. I don't care what anybody says. Deron Smith's a veteran next year. You know what I mean? Like, at least in my world, he's a young dude and whatever. But, like, he's already lasted way longer than a lot of other people. that came out a year before him or a year at, you know what I mean? So you're right, Paul. I think it's one of those things with Fisher that and some of these other guys too that it's like, wow, you got to give him a shot. And maybe that's part of the thinking with Zeitler too. Like, wow, $11 million a year for a non-premier position, and we got to get some of these other guys ready to play. And even if it is a second round or third round draft pick, you know.
I get, you know, but the bottom line is, you know, they are going to end up worse at the guard position than they were last year, period. And maybe that their point is, well, so what? If that means that, you know, let's just, if that means that they're able to go out and be, would you rather be stacked at corner or worse at guard? And I can tell you what their answer is. You can just look up their first round picks last year. They would rather give that money to Dre Kirkpatrick, and they'd rather make sure that the locker room stays tight continues to have the leadership and left tackle like Andrew Whitworth does, than have a really good non-premium position that they feel like there's probably other guys that they could put in there. And maybe the fall off is a little bit, but in the big picture of the team, it's not that big of a deal. I don't know. Everyone else in the league seems to be valuing guards more than ever, and the Bengals are going away from that. So maybe this could end up being a huge pitfall for them. I might be amongst that group. I don't know. It's hard for me to let a guy that you drafted in the first round and developed and is going into his prime walk away and say that he's too expensive when all you ever say is draft, develop, retain.
Right. It is.
It's everything that you have said you believe in.
It's fascinating, Paul. I think, and I'm sure we'll get to this in some fashion, whether or not he's back or leaves, because you look at the league's in an interesting spot. Like, there's only so many Geno Atkins. There's only so many Aaron Donalds. There's only so many, like, premier interior guys who just can wreck you. However, interior pass rush is so important now because of the quarterbacks who want to get it out in 2.1 seconds, like an Andy Dalton, like a Tom Brady. That was the issue in the Super Bowl, or even when the Bengals offense broke down. It was what? There's that, you know, Russell Bodine has his issues. Kevin Zeitler actually didn't start out his year that great on the right side those first couple games. Clint Bowling's health issues. Like, you saw the problems that can happen there. And then you go to, like, the Dallas-Tennessee model where they value huge offensive linemen because they see, wait a minute, there's a market inefficiency in the NFL. Teams are playing nickel defense all the time. No one knows how to stop the run anymore because you can't practice it. You can't hit anybody. Guess what? Let's get a bunch of huge dudes and just blow people up the gut and pound the rock. So, like, and what does that happen? Then defenses adjust, and then you get those big, like, back in the early 2000s, like the Ted Washington-type dudes in the middle. Like, I mean, that's what this game is, and it's just interesting, Paul, because, like, you're right. Kevin Zeitler could go to a team and obviously start and pass protect, but also be a guy who helps a run game. I don't know. It's interesting. It's fascinating to see what they do. On one hand, I don't blame them for not valuing guards at $12 million because, like, their quarterback makes, like, $14 million. So, like, I get it. But it's interesting. It's sort of a larger trend issue around the league. And you know, when cap money goes up, you know, everybody gets paid. So it's fascinating in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to see your top paid players be Andy Dalton, A.J. Green, Geno Atkins, Kevin Zeitler? I mean, that would be your top four salary cap hits if you paid Kevin Zeitler market value. Is that putting your money in the premium positions?
Right.
You know, that's what the Bengals are all about, is putting their money, their big money, in their premium positions. And that's where their argument comes from. And I understand people that don't like it. I just made the argument against it.
Right.
But you're still going against your core philosophy in a year where the salary cap continues to go up, where you have more money available to do that type of thing.
Yep.
Anyway, these are the discussions being had. And I'm sure and I'm certain inside of Paul Brown Stadium, there are people on both sides of the argument like we're showing right now. But I think the bottom line is from everything we've heard, seen, observed out of the Bengals organization, it seems that we know which way it's fallen.
Yeah.
At least at this point. Let's run. Let's do some quick hits.
Yeah.
Let's do some quick hits through some of this stuff. Season ticket prices going up. Boo, people say. Yeah, I agree. Boo.
2% here. Real quick for Bengals fans, the 3-13 Bears' worst 16-game record in the long, long history of that franchise actually raised their ticket prices, season ticket prices, by less, slightly more than what the Bengals did, believe it or not. So I think it's team realizing not as many people are coming, so we need the people who are to pay a little more.
Yeah. That's happening. No one ever likes when ticket prices go up. This is technically the second straight year. Last year they tried to couch it by being like, hey, but preseason tickets went down. Yeah, they did, but they still the overall average ticket price for the whole package for the year went up. So that happens again. It's pretty common practice. No one likes it. No one wants a bad season followed by a season ticket price hike.
Right.
It's sort of the league. It's sort of the way it goes. You got to be as bad as the Browns.
Yeah.
When the Browns are like, all right, we're not going to do it this year. We're going to bring some prices down even. Like, that was pretty raw. We shouldn't have done that to you.
Yeah.
Or do something like the Falcons do. They made all their hot dogs and everything a certain bottom rate. That was obviously a cool deal that they did down there. I don't think that's happening. But so that was part of the news. Trevor Roach retired.
Yeah.
You wrote a story about that, which I thought was a really great piece, talking to him. He's only 24, for those of you who don't know. I mean, he got a cup of coffee. He was actually called up for the playoff game against the Steelers, played special teams. And he was in the first three games of last year when Burfict was on suspension. He was up for this Week 16 game. He was thought as a prospect that maybe he could get some more playing time. But it turns out for the last year, really, he's kind of just been he's not really into it, and so he decided to walk away.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was fascinating, Paul. I mean, basically said is he was ready to be done after college, but his dad passed away that summer after his college career ended at Nebraska. Wasn't drafted. He was hurt. But his dad played at Iowa State, loved football, and he basically said, look, my dad always wanted me to give it a shot. And so he gave it one, and he was active for a game, and I think you're right, Paul, he was ready to be done again and was like, well, maybe we'll win a Super Bowl. I mean, he really thought that, and that was the reason he came back for 16. So I got to give him a lot of credit. You know, clearly he had to fight himself to even play the last 2 years, which maybe is a testament to the sort of talent that he had. But then he only said he had one concussion. And honestly, Paul, he didn't say this to me, but I got the feeling he really didn't want to be lumped into sort of the Chris Borland discussion of guys who had a – I mean, maybe he was dishonest. I don't think Trevor's a dishonest guy. You've talked to him too. So I believe him when he says he's only had one diagnosed concussion. But he did mention some other injuries in high school, college, that he still feels in his legs. So he really wasn't interested in dealing with that into his 30s.
It's a little different when you've been a practice squad guy.
Right.
When you're giving up the potential of 53-man roster money compared to practice squad money, it's not such a crazy decision to get on with your life. I mean, he's going to go out there and use. He's a smart guy, got a degree. He's probably already got some inroads on what he wants to do. He could, in not very long, be making more money than he could make in a season on the practice squad with not killing himself in the process. So, it's a little different. I mean, if it was Vinny Ray,
yeah,
you would say, "Wow, you're going to leave that. You're going to leave that much money on the table. You're going to leave $6, $7, $8, $10 million on the table. Wow, that's crazy."
Right.
But it's not. It's a guy who's making, you know, not even hitting triple figures when you're on the practice squad. So, that's Trevor Roach. If you get a chance, read that story. A really interesting perspective from him on you know, his view towards football and his father's passing and how that all played together. Just a really, really interesting retrospective from Trevor and that Jim wrote. So go check that out at Sensei.com. We got to do our weekly Pac-Man update, which, I mean, this case just gets weirder and weirder.
A lot of ins, a lot of outs.
A lot of what have you.
A lot of strings in old Duder's head.
A lot of strings going on in old Duder's head. That's what I say. It really is. It's every week. It just gets more and more ridiculous. This week, we have the nurse who was spit on, hires a lawyer. Lawyer comes out and says that she's really unhappy with the way the case has been overlooking her. She hasn't even been asked to come in. They claims that, well, she went over to go be part of the grand jury, and Joe Dieters talked to her and basically patted her on the head and said to go away, all this stuff. Well, Dieters comes out and says, that lawyer is out of his mind. I have never talked to them ever. And that's more than likely the truth. Then it comes out, well, okay, well, it could be that she's trying to get money here out of Adam Jones and setting the stage for a civil lawsuit. There is just, and all of this while the NFL investigation is going on.
Right.
So, you know, and that case will be, as Dieters originally said, they're waiting until the NFL finishes before they go forward with what they're going to do. So that could go on for another few months waiting for the NFL. And who knows when the NFL is going to go, and who knows when this nurse is going to find anything out. But the lawyer's still not happy, and she still wants money. Right. What a mess.
Yeah, it is so weird.
What a mess.
It's so strange. And the only – you know, you and I debated this, and we both – we disagree with each other a lot on how we thought the team would handle this or should handle it. We didn't talk about this at all, other than to say Raj and the league does what they want when they want to do it. What I wonder, Paul, can Mike Brown, or should Mike Brown, press the league about this to say, hey, it's only fair for us to know what you're thinking before we have to make major personnel decisions? Is it fair? Has that should or has? I mean, I don't know. You know, the team is pretty. I mean, I wrote that story out of the combine where the team said they're really not sure on Adam's future. Which that's I guess where I'm going with this next step. The team isn't sure. What do we do here with this guy in this situation? Can they go to the league and be like, look, man, free agency's in, clock's ticking. We got another corner who might want $56 million. Like, yeah. Can they do that? Does Raj care? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't think he does. I mean, I don't. I think if you look at the history of how this type of stuff has gone down, he really does not care what teams think that they want or need on any timelines. Right. They're going to work how they work, especially when it's your player doing something dumb.
Right.
It's like, well, you know what? That's your player that you screwed that up. You know, yeah. This is how we work. We're not going to start doing favors to make your life easier because your guy was out allegedly headbutting and kicking cops and telling them the SSD and all this other stuff. So it's like, I think that's been the way the league operates, and I think that they'll continue to. But it's just turned into such a mess. And also, you know, I think you're right, though. They're going to sit there and say, what if the league takes a 4 or 8 game chunk or something out of Adam Jones for this? I don't think that it would be that big, but I could see 4.
Yeah. 4 appealed down to 3, something like that.
Something like that. I mean, we see a lot of stuff like that. I mean, that's a quarter of your season.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, we've gotten into that discussion a lot. So, you know, it's got to leave them Anthony. And you add that into the equation when you start talking about the discussion we had earlier about Dre Kirkpatrick being placed above Kevin Zeitler. The one thing we know this team does not want, desperately does not want, it's to be short on corners.
Right, right.
There is nothing clearer about the franchise philosophy of the Bengals than that they want all the great corners that can run and cover. They want all of them. And they cannot have too many, in their opinion. So the idea of being left short on that has to freak them out quite a bit, even if only for a quarter of the season.
Yeah, it'll be. I don't know. It's interesting. I brought it up just because this is such a. All of this from the beginning has been so weird and played out so oddly. Yep. Why not? Why not, Rod? Just come out and be like, we're gonna make a decision in late February, which we never do, but we're gonna do it because why the heck not? You know what I mean? Like it just. It's one of those things where it's just such a – it's so strange. All of this has been so strange, the way it's you know been handled, been played out, whatever. I don't know. There's also a part of me that feels like nothing will happen. It'll be like, you know, we'll be talking about this on August 1st.
absolutely. It could absolutely. That being the case, where all of a sudden, but right as training camp is getting started, Raj comes down with a decision. I mean, those things, you never know when they're going to come, and they typically are before training camp starts.
Yeah, it's so strange. It's such a
but
weird.
It's also very very unpredictable. So
it's all about it is. It is. It's like, you know, we just need a rug to tie it all together.
That's all you need. That's all you need. You need. There's got to be a money handoff on the bridge, you know. You got to.
So weird.
The whites. all right. Well, I guess we can find out why you're mad. I assume you're mad about something. You're always mad.
Yeah. I'm not really a huge pop culture guy. Like I pay attention to stuff. I try to stay up on, especially music. I was watching the Grammys, you know, early this week, and the thing I guess that made me that was kind of just driving me crazy about it was sort of the instant. I don't know who this person is, therefore all of this is terrible. Reaction, and I'm sitting there. And look, there were some people, everyone knows at this point, I'm a hip-hop guy, I'm an R&B guy, I don't know who, like, these new country people are, I don't know who, you know, I mean, heck.
Sturgill Simpson?
Yeah.
Are you up on Sturgill
Well,
Simpson?
I know of Sturgill Simpson, I do think it's really hard to sing when, like, salamanders are running around in your mouth, but, like, he's cool, I guess I was mad at Twitter and Facebook. Like I don't, and I know that's what that is now, but that's the best part of the Grammys, in my opinion, isn't like the performances and what you think is self-indulgent, what you think isn't, what's classy, what isn't. It's like it's music and it's new to you. Like the whole hipster mindset drives me crazy. If you never heard The Weeknd before, if that was their first exposure to that dude, Shazam it. Like, they make apps for it. Google it. Like, I that's what made me mad, Paul. It was like, music is such a cool thing. All kinds of music are cool things. And I just didn't – it was like I finally had to put social down because I do like to like be interactive and tweet Facebook. That's like what we do now, especially when you don't have to cover the event ourselves. And I'm like, Google it, Shazam it, and then hit play during the commercial. Like, open to new stuff. People were, that made me mad. I was like, come on. Like, that's what it's, Hit play.
I agree. You're right. One of the best things about the Grammys is for every year, especially as I get older and older and more out of touch, it's a good chance to find out, like, hear some new music and be like, you know what? I like that guy or that girl or I like that band. And I didn't know who they were before this, but I saw them do a, you know, do a duet. It was like, or whatever, you know, like, oh, who was that that Alicia Keys was singing with or whatever you're talking about, you know? And I think you can learn a lot about new people and come to like them. I bet a lot of people found out who Kendrick Lamar was when he did that ridiculous performance on the Grammys a couple of years ago. With Imagine Dragons. It was incredible. And I think a lot of people learned about him that night.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I think that's frustrating. You know what? Why can't Beyonce just sing a song? Whatever happened to the day we just get up and she would get up and just like dance and sing? Why does it have to be like a recreation of the opening ceremonies of the Olympics?
You know? Well, Lemonade had some spoken word, you know. So I mean, that's part of the album and you know all of that stuff. But that was the one thing, or it was like sing and you know,
it was a lot. There was a lot happening.
It was a production, you know, and
don't get mad. And don't get mad, you know, brother or sister or friend, when somebody else wins. Don't start talking about how you're gonna boycott.
Yeah,
Solange, I see you.
That's a whole other.
And you lost to Adele,
right?
Okay.
Yeah. This isn't Metallica losing out best metal record to Jethro Tull. You know what I mean? Like
calm down.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks you're great. You were nominated. Freaking Adele had this unbelievable album with these massive hits. Okay?
Yeah.
So, and how about you know what? I need to start doing that on the BBP is we get like, you know, a minute and a half into the BBP, and I just stop and say, nope, starting over. I didn't like that. And leave it. And just leave it. Just roll like that. We would do that on Beyond the Stripes. I'm just going to start over the show 2 minutes in whenever we have somebody on. I'm like, nope, that wasn't good enough. That's not up to my standards. I don't care for a lot. It doesn't even matter to me.
That is the ultimate boss move.
Yeah.
Like, you know how much – do you know how much juice you have – to do that, like, because one of the first reactions was like Adele showing Mariah Carey how to handle the situation, because everyone remembers New Year's. Like, Mariah Carey had the audio issues, she tried to power through it, didn't really work. You have to have just that's more than juice, man. That's like an orchard that you just smushed. Whatever you want to call that, to just be like, you know what? Yeah, you're right. Grind it to a halt and get it done. But you know what? It worked. And I thought, you know, she sounded better. Whatever's going on with the pitch and the audio that even on that very first song and Hello to Open the Grammys, I think she's tired. I don't think we're going to see Adele at the Grammys for a while, Paul. Performing, I think, three straight songs of them messing up the audio. And then you do that to Metallica, like, yeah, it was just...
Poor Metallica. That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, doing a stadium tour. Sorry, I'm not coming to Paul Brown Stadium. They're going to almost... It seems like most NFL stadiums they're going to be at this summer. They are instead doing Rock of the Rain on the Range in Columbus to kind of cover this area, just so you know. So no big Metallica concert at PBS. Although Metallica is like... huge in Cincinnati. They would do multiple day runs here back in their heyday all the time. So I imagine that's I'm kind of surprised they didn't end up at PBS. I'm kind of curious what happened there. All right. That wraps up. So we just had this whole music talk. I mean, what should we go out with a little Adele or something like that?
I have a few options. You made me think of one. At the very start of this BVP, which then got my head spinning into a second. So I'll throw these out there and see what you're feeling. So the first one I thought of was, you know, we were like, oh, there's a draft. We're talking a little free agency, Grammys. Money Trees by Kendrick Lamar from a few years ago was the first thing I thought of. I'm like, well, but then you drop the whole Hogan NWO thing, which brings you to Voodoo Child from Jimmy. I'm like, wow, that's cool. But then I'll be honest, I've got sucked into the Young Pope on HBO, and you get Devlin with Ed Sheeran. Their version of All Along the Watchtower is the theme song for that show. So that's like current dudes doing Jimmy. You had Voodoo Child, which is Jimmy, and my 9 o'clock shadow, Hating on Your Mock Draft, that I loved. It forced you into, even though it was too early. So I don't know. I think I hit a lot of bases there. I don't know. Okay. We can go with Adele. I love Adele. You know,
I might have something. You know what this time of year is? You know what this time of year is? Rumors.
Yeah,
that's what it is. Rumor has it, it's pretty much how every single conversation starts in the February dead period as we all wait to see what's about to happen at the combine and free agency. And somebody, thankfully, that we just got done talking about has a very popular song called Rumor Has It.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe we should go with that.
Yeah.
But you had very good ideas, and I don't want this to come across as some sort of like dictatorship where I just said, thank you for your ideas, now sit down and shut up. But I feel like that might fit. Maybe we should go week to week where we have to like sell to the other one and the other one makes a decision. So I don't like having to be the final decision maker. I feel like we all have good ideas here. Yeah.
I've had actually a good run of late.
You have had a good
run. So while I have good ideas, Adele is amazing. Definitely crushing on Adele. So I will never not roll with that. Because let's be real. Like, it's the summer. It's a heel turn. So Voodoo Child and All Along the Watchtower may come back.
They may come back. You got plenty of time to continue playing your role of heel. You got plenty of time to really dive in. I think we've only seen the tip of the iceberg of the villain that you can be here.
Yeah.
So we'll continue to develop that character.
I think so.
All right. Well, keep checking in. We'll, of course, have the BVP again next week. We'll keep rolling you in. Combine is February 28th-ish, that week through that first weekend in March. So we'll have lots more information to get up there. And then free agency starts March 7th through the 9th is the legal tampering window. And then March 9th is free agency. So those are sort of the dates to keep an eye on coming up. And we'll, of course, have the BVP back for you again next week. So I hope you check it out then. Until then, rumor has it in the NFL, a lot of stuff's happening. We'll find out soon enough. So thank you, Adele. Congratulations on all your awards. And we'll talk to you.
She ain't real. She ain't gonna be able to love you like I will. She is a stranger. You and I have history, or don't you remember? Sure, she's got it all. But baby, is that really what you want? Blessed up, so you got your head in the clouds. You made a fool out of you, and boy, she's bringing you down. She ain't got your love anymore. Rumor has it.